Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Big night at Ellis Island. Koval on Flamingo. Willie's here. It's Cofield. We got 5+ hours of show and partying on the way. We're in the front yard, all decked out for Halloween. Looking forward to some of the Halloween festivities right here. And, of course, every Friday night they've got their David Perico weekend football tailgate. That goes at 10 o'clock. But so many cool things going on at the front yard. We'll tell you all about it. Like I said, over the course of the next 5 hours. What a sports day yesterday. And what it sets up this week is awesome. Here in town and to start in L.A. First of all, Willie, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm fired up about the World Series. I'm fired up the wrong way about my Jets. For Raiders fans out there, you guys should be livid about yesterday's game. And we got an NFL that is developing in pretty interesting fashion. I think very topsy-turvy, even though there are people out there who are like, clearly the Chiefs are the best team. I guess by the record they are, but I saw some things in the Chiefs-Niners game yesterday that was a little concerning on both sides. But you were going to jump in. What do you got?
I, too, am excited for the World Series. Not as excited as one Jordan Ramirez, who began texting me, I think when the score was 7-3, with screenshots of ticket sites, because he told me last week if the Yankees and the Dodgers go to the World Series, he's taking me.
So, oh, wow.
So he goes, as long as it doesn't cost more than $2,500. So he began texting me, and there are two different sets of pairs of tickets that would have run around $2,100. The problem is this is such a busy week where he was going to have to push back clients at the gym, and I've got nothing but from here till next Monday, 8 straight days of something. So I was like, well, we're both going to lose money in terms of having to go down there. So we were going to do Saturday, and that was good. So now there's an outside chance we might go if there's a game 6. But anyway, that's where it was, and I told him, I said, hey, I appreciate it. Because, you know, one of the very first things I ever took him to was NBA Finals after a big major Junior Olympic Taekwondo tournament in San Antonio. We went to see the Spurs and the Pistons. When was that? I believe 2004, maybe 2003. And he was like, I want to take you to the World Series. So, yeah, anyway, but nevertheless, we're excited in the Ramirez clan for the Dodgers and the Yankees. One of the very first, that's probably the very first, well, it's not the very first world championship, but as far as I remember back, as far like spending time with my grandfather was those back-to-back 77, 78. First time I ever bet on a World Series.
What?
With my grandfather, yes.
At age what?
At age, so
7 or 8?
8 and 9.
Okay.
8 and 9. And what's crazy is I bet on the Yankees. My grandfather took the Dodgers. But the Dodgers have always been my team. It was the first major league park I'd been to, first team I'd seen, sort of fallen in love with Garvey, Lope, Say, you know, all those guys. So, anyway.
I feel like we're, with the Dodgers-Yankees World Series on the way, we are about as low-key fans on both sides.
Yeah.
As there is. I don't remember you talking about it a whole lot. I almost never mention it. More of my Yankee rants. Well, one, I love Salerno because Salerno still is a hardcore Yankee fan, so he flips out.
Yeah.
My thing is more with the way the club operates. But, hey, they made it. You know what? They built a team that made it through. I'm just going to say this right now because I was scanning social media last night. And, I can pick just about any city, and most of them are in the Midwest. I can pick almost any Midwest city that has a baseball team. And I will often call those fans in those cities pukes because you're liars. You're generally liars and duplicitous and contradictory and hypocrites.
Wow.
Now, I will point to a city like Kansas City, which I bash all the time, because looking around the internet last night, and listen, I'm looking for it, right? I wanted to see the pissing and moaning about a Dodger-Yankee World Series. And, you know, one of the first ones I saw was someone based in Kansas City. I'm not going to watch it. Oh, but you'll watch the Kansas Jayhawks. Weird. So in that case, Goliath is cool. But in this case, by the way, perceive Goliath. Because if you look at the success since 1980 of the Dodgers and Yankees and winning world championships, and you compare it to the expectations and what Kansas basketball, the Yankees or Dodgers of college basketball delivers, you're fine with that. But when it's baseball, and again, it's a perception. For anyone out there who's like, oh, money does it again. They haven't played each other in 43 years.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Think about that. We are both guys. What do you want to say? Are you mid-50s or early
55. 50s?
Okay, so we're going to say I'll go mid-50s, right? We are both dudes in our mid-50s. These teams haven't played since 1981. Like, when when I heard it and then you calculate it, you're like, 43 years.
It's crazy,
for the most glamorous matchup that used to be in baseball history. I mean, this is going to be the 12th time they meet, but they haven't met in 43 years. Now, have they won World Series? Yes, the Yankees more successfully than the Dodgers, but money and Goliath perceptions don't always deliver in baseball because, as I pointed out, I've made my baseball talk career about this, is I don't want to hear whining about baseball because it really is the most balanced sport outside of maybe the NHL. I think it's more balanced than the NHL. And people will fire back and go, well, you know, there's no rev sharing or a cap. There is rev sharing. And in the NFL, there's rev sharing, but the problem is the NFL is so predicated on one position. Whoever gets that guy, or whatever teams have that guy, the quarterback, can be the dominant franchise for 6, 8, 10, in the case of the Patriots, 20 years, win a bunch of titles, and now we're in the – I think this is the middle of the Chiefs' run. This might be the first third.
And you,
the Chiefs run.
You bring up the example of the guy in Kansas. Have no problem. The Kansas City Chiefs keep getting in.
I didn't even mention the Chiefs because I think the Kansas City fans' comeback will be, well, we drafted Mahomes. But what people forget is a lot of times the Dodgers, the Yankees, a lot of their core players are homegrown. And they augment a lot with money. And a lot of times the money just blows up right in their face. So rant done for now. It's a glamour World Series. And then I guess the other part of this is while people will piss and moan about, because I saw it in the semis, oh, three of the four highest payroll teams, they made it. Okay, the Mets were dreadful for much of the year. They made a run at the end of the year, which is also a great thing about baseball, that with 50 games left on the table, you can still make a run and get on the dance floor. That's absolutely tremendous. But the part about lying is, for baseball fans, is they will rail against, say, the 6 or 7 biggest payroll teams and go, I'm not going to watch the World Series because of that. But you don't watch when they don't make it.
Right. I was just
last
gonna say,
year,
when they're boring
no
teams.
No one watched.
Right.
So in every sport, you need Giants to make the championship games because naturally you hate them. You're going to tune in. Listen, if you hate L.A. and New York, which is like a whole different thing, right? If you hate L.A. and New York and you don't want to tune in, I guess I get that. I want to see the best teams possible. I want to see the biggest stars possible. So it interests me. And I obviously the gates at each stadium, it's going to be insane to get a ticket. And the ratings are going to be through the roof. And it's a sport right now that I believe is having trouble competing this time of year with the NFL and college football. It kind of needs this in terms of BAFO numbers.
It's, dare I say this, and I'm going to probably get bashed for saying this, but you know why else they needed this? Off of a historic WNBA season and the 5-game series that we just saw, even though it came down to some very controversial stuff, it segues from one championship series into another one as far as battling against the NFL, battling against, as you said, college football. So in terms of it's not competing against the WNBA, but at the same time, Dodgers or Yankees, it's still having to compete this weekend against college football and the NFL. It's a great segue in terms of for the general sports fan to segue from an incredible championship series that came off of a historic season with the women into a Major League Baseball series that most baseball fans definitely wanted to see outside of the markets that you're in if you're fans of the Guardians, the Mets, you know, and then other the Astros. If you're in Houston, you know, you probably hate it. But at the same time, if you're a diehard baseball fan, this is a series that you're going to tune into, you're going to be intrigued by, you want to sit down and watch. And like you said, I mean, anybody that's going to go out and clamor about money and bankrolls, it hasn't proved, you know, in years past. If you're a Houston Astros fan and you're complaining this year, well,
right.
When the Yankees when you beat the Yankees to get into the World Series, like, ha ha ha, you and your bankroll up yours. Yeah,
the Astros have been dominant with core players, but also by augmenting. Their acquisition of Justin Verlander changed the entire landscape across baseball. If the Yankees or Dodgers or Phillies get Justin Verlander, maybe the Astros don't win any of these titles. And you know what? If there had been a Royals-Braves series, I'd be interested. I think the Dodgers actually are the prime example of how you win in the postseason and how you win championships. Now, they haven't delivered on this yet. And oddly, I will point to another franchise that I think came up with this formula, the Rays. The Rays reared Andrew Friedman. He goes to the Dodgers, and with all that money, he can augment with giant contracts like Ohtani, keeping Betts around. But the reason the Dodgers are in the World Series, and I didn't think they'd make it, because I'm still at times, Willie, in that old school mentality, you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s, and I don't know, who do you want to go back to? Like the Orioles, right? Remember the Orioles, how good they were, and this is probably very early on in our sports viewing history, but the Orioles having, you know, 1.4 guys who could go over 200 innings. And starting pitching is important, and hammers are important, but spending $35 to $40 million for a hammer at the top of the rotation is more than risky. What the Rays came up with, and then the Royals followed, and the Dodgers are really making it into the next level thing because they have even more money, is you should build your team with good starting pitching, but you also should have five closers.
Oh yeah, 100% bullpen.
I mean, every year, if you don't have five closers, and I'm serious, like people hear this and they're like, five closers. First of all, they're not that expensive. You're never gonna have to sign a closer to 4 years and $140 million. But if you get guys who have closing experience from both sides of the plate, and then you add even more guys behind them who are setup guys, you saw what Dave Roberts did yesterday. It's like, hey, we don't have anyone, so it's going to be Kopech, and then at the end, Blake Treinen, who's been, you know, fighting back from arm injuries forever, the old closer from 3 years ago, he's out there closing out the game. So that, to me, that's the formula, because pitching is so unpredictable now. No one really can go, or they won't let them go, 7-8 innings and throw 140 pitches. So you got to have an awesome bullpen. And I think that's a lot of what the series comes down to. A lot of it is Dodger hitting depth against Yankee dudes who are good hitters, but also whiffers. You know, they have a lot of strikeouts. But it's going to come down to, yes, pitching. But I'm not so concerned about Gerrit Cole. Like, it'd be nice to have Gerrit Cole out there throw two or three games of 7-plus innings. It's going to come down to the bullpens. Because so much of the game are about the bullpens now.
Well, it's good. I mean, the fact of the matter is both rotations and both bullpens, they have hard throwers. There's really, I mean, get down to the nitty-gritty, the junk and everything. You're talking about two of the best hitting lineups in baseball. So no matter how much junk you want to throw at the off-balance stuff or off-speed stuff to keep them off balance, the bottom line is both lineups are going to thrive in this series when they try to come down the pike, when you're talking about hard throwers. So, yes, the bullpens, I think, outweigh – the necessity for the strong bullpen outweighs the starters in this series because of how well these teams hit and produce.
And I'll say one more thing about the big budget stuff, which we started the conversation with. I saw a good tweet yesterday, which I put on the rundown. Someone saying, you know, Indians – check that – Guardians owner is worth $4.6 billion. Yankees owner is worth $3.8 billion. They're both super wealthy. But, and I don't even love Steinbrenner. One owner is committed to winning at all cost. The other owner, the Guardians, they try, but do they go the extra level? Right? They're all billionaires. You want to win or not? So when people get mad, don't get mad at the system. Get mad at the owner. They're all billionaires. outside of a couple guys who are worth, what, a little over a billion. If you get into this, you can make a lot of money. You got to spend money. And if you're worried about money, you need to get out of it. But there's a lot of teams that could be here. I mean, come on. Yesterday, you know, we at the end of the series, we find out who's the NLCS MVP. Tommy Edman. Anyone could have had him. He was hurt the entire year. You know he's a good player. And somehow the Dodgers land him. And that's what if you're a fan of a team that made the playoffs, that is absolutely what you should be pissed off at. Is that the Tommy Edmonds of the world, the key guys who can play seven positions? Why are they available? Well, they're available. Why can the Yankees or the Dodgers get them in acquisitions? Why can the Phillies get them? Why doesn't your team get them? That's what really the focus should be on. Bullpen and supporting cast. Those guys come up big. Spend the freaking money.
Hello, now, Oakland A's? Yeah, or well, Las Vegas A's?
I don't even know. I don't even. Who knows what's going to happen with that whole thing. But anyway, World Series coming up on Friday. It'll be here on Lotus Broadcasting. We're set up at Ellis Island in the front yard. Monday Night Football is on the way. We're going to get to the Raiders yesterday, which every week we just have new questions, and the questions are not positive.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
I'll be honest, I didn't expect 2-5. You know, like to see that flipped. But at the end of the day, you got to live in reality.
Shotgun to Minshew. Rams bring a blitz. He settles. He fires over the middle. It's behind. It's deflected, and it's picked off. The Rams at the 31-yard line.
Hell, we're trying to be the best team we can, and right now we're not a good team.
No excuses from Antonio Pierce, but doesn't make you feel any better about the way the Raiders are playing right now. Pierce basically set up the fail. Quarterback play, well below even what we thought was kind of just a baseline. Minshew was not good yesterday. Akon gets hurt. Run game works sometimes. Other times it does not. And then AP throws salt in the overall wound with weird decisions. And you watch that game, and the Raiders had to settle for a lot of field goals, which means that's moderate offensive success. But at the end of the game, Willie, you're inside of 3 minutes. You stall out on the 9-yard line. You got a fourth down. You got three timeouts. You going to get the ball back? Because you're kicking a field goal there. I don't get it. And then, again, this is not analytics. And maybe I don't want to take shots at anyone. The old crew at CBS, I'm sure, would have been in favor of this. When you're down 20-12 and it's a one-score game and you can score a touchdown and instead you kick a field goal to make it a one-score game, I don't get it. You might not get down there again.
Well, in the other,
you got to go for it. And here's the great thing about going for it on the 9. You need a first down basically to get a touchdown, right? And if you fail, the Rams are buried at the 9. And then if you stop them, you're going to get the ball in good position. Now, in the end, they couldn't stop them, but I don't understand a field goal. This almost seems too simple to break it down this way. Like, I'm not the football coach. He is. I almost feel stupid getting after Antonio Pierce, but when you look at it, you're like, go for it. And this isn't hindsight, because I know a lot of people are watching, and I'm sitting there watching, and I'm like, field goal? You're at the 9. There's no time left.
Well, not only that.
Freaking go for it.
Not only that, but here's the problem. You kick a field goal, you're down by 5. Guess what you need still?
Still a touchdown.
You still need a touchdown. So whether you get it or not on the final drive or that drive, if you fail and you get the ball back, guess what you still need? A touchdown. These are the decisions. But I want to go back to something you said. It stuck here for a minute. That's why I've been having my face crinkled up since then. Did you say AP, who was set up to fail? Did you say that?
I think with their quarterback plan was shaky at best.
Okay, but he took over last season, in the middle of the season, made AOC his starter. He had an entire offseason. How was he set up to fail? They brought in Gardner Minshew under his regime.
Well, is he the GM? Does he make the decisions on who the quarterbacks are going to be? I mean, I guess
he... you're telling me he doesn't have any input? He wanted Jaden Daniels. Why didn't they get him? Because he wasn't available. I get that part.
Because they won 5 games down the stretch.
Okay.
They were out of position.
They made the decision as a whole.
So you think he's overruled one by not trading the world to get into that two hole, which I still don't believe is actually available. Now looking back on it, I think the commies were committed. Commies committed. Right?
Yes.
Easy to say. Commies were committed to taking Jaden Daniels, not trading out of the spot. Adam Peters, the GM, was playing games. It's like, oh, let's see what people offer us. You know, I mean, if someone's going to offer you four first-round picks, it may be a move.
Do you think at the time that Devontae Adams was on the table, and do you think if he was, that it would have been in consideration? Devontae Adams and some picks for Jaden Daniels, you think the Commanders look at that? I think that it sounds enticing because look where they're at now. In a terrible situation with terrible quarterback play and no Devontae Adams and one star on the team, realistically. I'm not saying that these guys are not good, and I'm not saying that they're not putting forth their best effort. But the fact of the matter is, there's one star on this team. There's one guy who can be an all-pro. There are a bunch of guys who can step up and make big plays at different times. There's one star. Outside of that, there's no more Devontae Adams, and they do not have solid, consistent, good quarterback play. So
okay,
I don't.
So how are you disagreeing with me on the Antonio Pierce?
Because I don't think that he was set up to, if at any point he was set up to fail, it was last year midseason taking over for crap McDaniels. But during the offseason, he could have definitely used his authority as a head coach to say, hey, we need to make a move. If anything, he set himself up. He had the entire offseason to.
I don't think he has the kind of authority you think he does.
I disagree. I don't think.
If he does, that's kind of distracting.
I don't think that he has John Gruden authority, but I also think that Tom Telesco is a little more open to listening to, hey, we need to go get this quarterback. He's not sitting back saying, here's what we're giving you, deal with it. I really don't think that that's the case. I could be dead wrong. I mean, this is something for, you know, you're going to have Raiders guys on, insiders, Adam, later in the week, some guys that are a little more in the know than I am because they're out there more than I am. I'm hardly out there. But the fact of the matter is, he's got to have some input. They've got to ask him, what do you want to do to coach? Yeah, I know he's a defensive-minded guy, but at the same time, I find it hard to believe that they just said, here's who we're getting you, run with it. I just do. I think that he was in on some of the conversations.
Giveaway time, 364-1100, Cypress Hill in town this Saturday, downtown Las Vegas Event Center, dlvec.com for the tickets. We've got two right now for Cypress Hill, 364-1100, caller 7.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, welcome to the sports capital of the world. Driver, start your engine!
Busy times for Barry Odom. I'll put it this way, Willie. You ever get overcommitted, either in by your own doing or I guess it would be by your own doing, or you don't have a booker for you. You ever get in a position where the night ends and you're like, oh, God, I get to do that tomorrow. I forgot. Why did I agree to do that?
Yeah, that's me every night about having to wake up.
Yes.
I committed to waking up. What am I thinking?
I have to imagine at 2:30 in the morning on Sunday morning that Barry Odom, thinking ahead to Boise State and the task that's at hand, stopping Ashton Jeanty, a generational running back. Boise's coming to town, and you're like, oh, God, I got to go do the LVMS, the NASCAR thing. He did it. He did it. I talked to him. I'm trying to think of what time it was. It had to be about midnight, and he had a cough. He's clearing his throat. He's losing his voice. And then you at the Oregon State game.
In Corvallis.
Yeah, in Corvallis. Then the next morning, midday, and then you hear.
Did they red-eye it, or did they get back in the morning?
Straight out. So back at maybe 3:25 in the morning, probably home by 3:45, 4. I don't know. He might have gone to his office and stayed up for hours. I don't know.
And the thing is people may be you may be thinking to yourself, if you're listening, what's the big deal? He probably went out there, did it, and left. Okay. There's one way in and one way out. There is a back road, but by now, after so many years of the LVMS, you know, that place being open, people know those back roads. It's not that easy. It probably was easy to get out of there because once everybody's in.
Right.
But to get in there, you either had to go really early or time it properly. They didn't helicopter him in.
It is the football.
It's tiresome.
It's the football coach intensity and mentality.
Yeah.
Right? when you got a big game coming up, frankly, every game, when you got a big game coming up, all you want to do is prep, and there's never enough time to get ready.
At least he got out of the way the next morning.
That was a nice job by him.
Did anybody ask him Monday morning or this morning?
They did, and he gave a very gracious answer. Like, he didn't go like, man, that was tough. I didn't enjoy doing that. I'm not saying. He said he enjoyed it. It was an honor. So I just know the way coaches are. You're around them. They're intense.
Would he have been ridiculed, or would he have been scrutinized or questioned with arguably the biggest game outside of last year's Mountain West, which I know you wrote that down, if he drove the pace car like somebody else did last year?
Oh, Devontae?
Remember?
Now, I got to tell you, that is one of the reasons I wasn't on last week, so the Adams trade goes down. That is one of the memories of Devontae Adams that I was like, good riddance.
And Adam was not wrong for asking.
He was an annoying person to deal with, like overly protective. You know what's funny? The more I watch his taco commercials, I'm like, I don't even think he's acting. He's just kind of grumpy and like, oh, I got a taco place here, man. Kind of tired of hearing about the Cantina Chicken. Like, why?
I don't.
Why
here's
are you like
the thing.
This?
I talked to Devontae I've talked to him a couple times, but one conversation, like, not deep. I don't want to use the word deep. Like, one-on-one, no recorder, no nothing. And it was during the Pro Bowl when it was here a couple years ago, the one that you paid for to go to with the SO.
Yeah. That was a great game.
That was 2 years ago.
That was a great game.
Right? That was his
simulated flag football.
Wasn't that the first year he was? No. It's the first year he was here. Anyway. I don't know about if he's just a genuinely a grumpy guy as much as I think he wishes that having to with what comes with being. Remember when Asia Wilson broke down? Well, she broke down a few times this year. But when she broke down, it was during her speech to her teammates after becoming the first person to score or whatever it was that she. Remember, she got emotional to me. She said, "I hate being me sometimes. I hate with what comes with it." I think that's Devontae Adams. I think that he wishes he could go do what he does.
Or winning is fun. Winning in Green Bay is even more fun because you have no coverage.
Win or
lose,
there's almost no negative. Yeah.
And this has been a dysfunctional franchise. And
but to be honest,
I'm not saying the media is anti-Raiders, but they're waiting for the next blow up. All right, quick timeout. When we come back, we're going to talk to Steve Kim.
Steve Kim, the host of the Three Knockdown Rule podcast, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
Let's bring in Steve Kim. Steve Kim 323 up on Twitter. Knower of all things, especially philosophically, as he's known as Kimfucius. How are you, sir?
Gentlemen, hope you guys had a good weekend.
We did. We did. Some wins, some losses, a great week on the way. You know, I got to start out with, I think you're the perfect guy to talk to on a Monday about this one, because I got feelings. I got feelings on this. Deshaun Watson goes down. The Achilles is snapped. A lot of snarky remarks. A lot of celebration on social media.
Yeah, you know, look, Whitlock and I talked about it this morning. I'm not a fan of people cheering for the maiming of players or injuries. I've never been that way, but some of the hand-wringing, look, fans are fans, and they're going to really have emotions or feelings based on your performance. And so a lot of the legal issues and the lawsuits that we know about with Deshaun Watson, look, we are very forgiving as a society. If you perform your job well, we'll overlook a lot of things. And from the player's perspective, I know some people are getting on Myles Garrett or Jameis Winston for what they said. But at the same time, we all know people that we have great relationships with that may have a sketchy past. And what do we always say? Well, he's good to me. I like him. He's never done me wrong. So there's a lot of ways to look at it. But, you know, then you talk to some people that were actually at the game. You hear reports. It wasn't all that widespread. It's not like the whole stadium was cheering for the injury for Deshaun Watson.
That whole thing about, hey, that person was good to me. Is it okay to say that? Because that's kind of where Jameis was going, although I know Whitlock said that Jameis started kind of painting him, Deshaun Watson, as a victim.
Yeah, I will. Jameis is an American treasure. He must be protected at all costs, because even when you disagree with him, he puts a smile on your face. I find him to be a very amusing, engaging character. But, yeah, you're right. Look, let's not make him out to be a war hero or someone that won the Congressional Medal of Honor. Let's keep this in stride here. He's a football player that got injured. He's getting a lot of money, and his money's actually guaranteed. So we don't have to start a GoFundMe campaign for him. That is the reality. But, yeah, you know, players are going to have a different perspective on these things than the fans. And then us media members, we're going to have a bunch of different opinions on it. We really are. Some are going to make light of the fact that people didn't boo him until only he was bad at football. That is true. But at the same time, I give fans credit, though, because a lot of athletes say, well, what goes on in my personal life should be none of your business. So maybe the fans' perspective isn't all that bad. Perform on the field, that's your job, and that's how we're going to judge you.
Steve Kim is with us. So we mentioned Whitlock, and, you know, I admire guys like Whitlock and Hurd and Stephen A., and they have to come up with takes. They got to be hot take, hot shots. And, you know, it's funny, a couple weeks ago, a good example, and I'm sure he'd probably want to erase all the stuff off the internets now, but Hurd went with the angle of, oh, look at Danny Dimes. Daniel Jones, he's back! So I'm kind of laughing at that now because he's not back. He's not good. Whitlock's take on the Jets up and down and tying it to Russell Wilson I found fascinating, that he still has hope for the Jets. But I guess did he not see enough yesterday to be convinced that Russell Wilson is the guy for the Steelers?
I mean, look, if the question is he their best current option above Justin Fields? Maybe he is, but he got better as the game went along, and it seems like Georgia Pickens is more in tune with him than he was Fields. I thought the Jets were in complete control of that game going into halftime, then Aaron Rodgers throws a game-changing interception right before half. I thought that was inexcusable. That is completely on Aaron Rodgers. And, yeah, you're right, because for the Jets to win enough games in their last 10 to make the playoffs, do you really see a team that can go 7-3 the next 10 games, guys? I don't. And as for the Steelers, look, they're grinding away. They have a very good defense. And maybe the goal for whoever is in charge of that offense, just do enough that you're not bad enough to lose us a game.
Steve Kim's with us. Breaking down some NFL, we're going to get to college football, and in particular the Heisman. I've seen some good back and forth between Ashton Gentry and Travis Hunter. We'll get to that inside of 4 minutes. Something struck me, actually struck me last week. Watching Patrick Mahomes approach the sideline and the way defenders treat him with kid gloves is really beginning to infuriate me. And last week when I was watching a game, he did one of those things where he runs to the sidelines and reaches across the first down line. The fact that his hand hasn't been broken by a defender dropping a hammer on his arm is beyond belief. And then yesterday was even worse. He tiptoed to the sideline and popped off a 33-yard run. It is crazy. And I saw you retweet the Mike Sando highlight of a quarterback 30 years ago just getting high load and destroying his helmet, popping up in the air. Quarterbacks, if they're smart like Mahomes, can really work this fear on the sidelines.
Yeah, that's the old famous clip of the Detroit Lions, Eric Hipple, and Tampa Stadium just getting obliterated by, I forgot what Tampa Bay linebacker. I honestly believe this. If it's a 15-yard penalty and you do it at a certain time, I don't want to go all Buddy Ryan and go Bounty Bowl, but I would tell one of my defenders, hey, guys, I'm not going to go out there and say you should do it, but I'm not saying that I'd be upset if you did, because if you're going to have a quarterback openly mock defenders and do that type of stuff, you know what? I'm just telling you, I'd be like, you know what, guys, if you do it early enough in the game and you do it hard enough, we can overcome those 15 yards. I think it's time for defenders to reassert their rights as football players.
And you're right. I mean, and it's hard to pick the right time of the game. You certainly don't want to do it on a closing drive to the game where they're trying to win. But it's gotten crazy along those sidelines. And, I mean, what's the worst that happens? Oh, boy, we knocked Patrick Mahomes out of the game. Tough luck. It's crazy the way things have been conditioned here. But, you know, the officials are part of the problem, too. My guess would be if Mahomes reached out and you basically broke his arm, they throw a flag on you. Like, no, his arm's in the field of play. Hey, that's fair game. I can smash that thing.
Steve, I've seen penalties where the quarterback's really not even out of bounds, but in the act of going out of bounds, they're given protection. And nowadays, let's be honest, I know there's that whole body weight thing. The reality is this. if you sack a quarterback too hard and the hit looks too violent, they will flag you. I don't like it. It is the way it is. But maybe in that old that famous NFL films clip from Al Davis, the quarterback must go down, and he must go down hard. Maybe defensive teams and head coaches start budgeting. You know what, guys? We're going to budget 30 yards of penalties to make our point. And if you knock a guy out, that's even better. Sounds vicious, sounds violent, but that's football.
How do you feel about your guy at Miami, Cam Ward, in the Heisman now?
Oh, I mean, it's funny that Ashton Gentry and Travis Hunter are arguing about who's going to... They should really be arguing about what suit they're going to wear in the New York Athletic Club, because everyone knows Cam Ward's going to win it. So, basically, they're very good contenders, but as long as Cam Ward keeps doing what he's doing, they're going to be engraving that name. And I really hope, Steve, with all the publicity I've given him, that Cam at least mentions me in his victory speech. That'd be a nice touch. Very classy.
Steve, we talked last week a little bit about your Canes in a tough Louisville. You had said you felt it was going to be a great game. You felt it was one that Miami needed to keep its eye on and not look past. And we got a fantastic game out of it, and they came out ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Willie, I will say this. They played Syracuse and Kyle McCord last game of the year. Now, Kyle will probably get drafted, but I do think Tyler Shuck is the best quarterback Miami will play this year. Coach Brohm is one of the great play callers in America. That running back, Isaac Brown's probably the fastest running back, and he gashed him for a big run. And then their two receivers, especially Ja'Cory Brooks, who was a five-star originally out of Alabama. That's where he first went to school. That's going to be the toughest offense they play. They still are not good enough defensively, in my view, to make a serious run. I see a playoff team, but until they can limit the amount of big plays in the last 6-7 games, and they may have to shuffle some of that secondary with younger players, I would hate to see this magical year of Cam Ward be wasted. I mean, you have two choices here. You can be 2019 LSU with Joe Burrow, or you can be 2023 with Jaden Daniels and waste what is a brilliant campaign.
On the Heisman thing, Travis Hunter said last week before his game of Ashton Gentry, hasn't played the schedule, didn't get to face defenses like Nebraska or Baylor, and obviously the Nebraska defense comment now looks asinine after they got slaughtered by Indiana. Gentry fired back with, he said, hey, I respect Hunter's opinion, but you know, I might set numbers here that are, you know, beyond belief in terms of rushing. Are you cool with a little back and forth between some of the Heisman candidates, or should they be taking the high road?
Well, I think Gentry is. It was really Hunter that kind of said, well, if I had as many touches as he did, what would I do? And my response is right, but you're not running into a 9-man box either. I don't know how you compare touches from a running back to a wide receiver. And Hunter is a rare talent. What he's doing right now may never be done again at this level of football. Guys, I'll make a statement right now. If Ashton Gentry somehow breaks Barry Sanders' all-time single-season rushing leader, in all seriousness, I think it's going to be very difficult to keep him away from that award. If he gets, like, let's say, 2,700 yards rushing, and I believe Barry Sanders in an 11-game regular season had, like, 26, 28, and given the fact that he had a big game against Oregon at Autzen, there's a very strong case that even though he's not playing in a P4 conference, Gentry, how do you argue against him as the best player in college football?
But I agree with you on the front end. What Hunter is doing is incredible, and a lot of this is going to come down to winning. It shouldn't come down to winning, but it always does. And this game this week here in Vegas, we're going to get Boise State at Allegiant against UNLV. UNLV's had a really good season. Last year they lost to them, I think it was 44-25. If Boise was to lose that game, that does hurt his chances, but it also is a national platform where he could go off for 250 and beat a 6-1 team, and that might cement the award for him.
Yeah, look, that game is key. And in terms of winning, you know, Boise State only has one loss where they may have actually outplayed Oregon. I mean, you take away those two special teams returns, Boise State hung right in there with them on a late Saturday night. And look, they are a playoff threat. It's not as if Boise State has a couple of losses. They have one loss, and if they finish this regular season 11-1, and they're in the thick of that 12-team tournament, all of the check marks are really there outside of playing in a major conference. So then the question becomes, and I go back to way back to 1992, everyone knew that it was either Marshall Faulk or Gino Toretta based on everything. And there was also Garrison Hurst at Georgia. And I remember Marshall Faulk got injured in the second game, last game of the year, against Fresno State before Miami was going to play them at Jack Murphy Stadium. Okay, I actually went to that game. And once Marshall Faulk got injured and could not play against number one ranked Miami, I even knew back then they're going to give that award to Gino Toretta. And everyone knew Marshall Faulk was the superior player. So a lot of this stuff is based on politics and perception.
Steve Kim is with us at SteveKim323 up on Twitter. He does the three knockdown rule with Mario Lopez. I want to close on this one because Willie's pretty fired up about the WNBA. It's one of his beats. I saw Whitlock going hard after the WNBA, saying lost $40 million, expanding franchises, don't have enough players for current 12 teams, hate their meal ticket, worst run league in the history of American sports. Where is the WNBA going into this offseason when things look like they're on the uptick, but financially, are they?
Well, Steve, outside of all you said, outside of that, it ran great. Old line from Gung Ho, by the way. Yeah, I don't know. And I think they announced today they are opting out of their current collective bargaining agreement. And I hear people saying, well, yeah, they want a bigger piece of the pie. There is no pie. They keep losing tens of millions. What pie are they talking about? And you're absolutely right. I don't know what this move is about. I'm sure Whitlock probably has thoughts about it that he'll get into for the next, I don't know, 4 months. But I just think it's strange that a league that is still losing money and the players are willing to blunt this momentum. I mean, think about how disastrous it would be. So if you're going to walk out on your agreement or opt out, does that mean there's a chance there may not be a season? Do you think that's the last thing that they should really be doing in terms of the momentum they built up this year? In year one of Caitlin Clark,
we got a minute.
Well, the opt out is with the Players Association. It's after the 2025 season, so they're opting out of the current agreement, which ends next season. Kathy Engelbert answered and said that she's going to work with them. They expect it to lose money because the NBA is fronting it, and when they talk about piece of the pie, they don't get a share of the revenue from the jerseys that people are buying with their name on it. That's what they're looking for, is equal pay like the players get from the NBA. When someone buys a Kelsey Plum jersey, she gets nothing. That's what they're talking about. So before people say, well, what piece of the pie? Not just saying you, Steve, people that don't understand, they're not getting a piece of people buying their likeness.
Well, I feel like a political presidential debate here. Sorry, Steve, no response. We're up against it. We'll build off of that.
I love the pie. Willie, we're good. Don't let Steve come between us. Come on, stop that.
No, we're good.
Not trying to stir the pot. When I say a minute, you go 45 seconds. Come on. All right, Steve, we will see you, buddy.